Salam dear listeners, and welcome to this last segment of Thursday Live, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai. The Dasara has begun, and Dasara always brings such amazing vibrations in Prashant Nilayam. It is basically a confluence, if you look at it in one way, of all the principal paths of devotion enunciated in the Bhagavad Gita. The Karma Marga, the Bhakti Marga, the Jnana Marga. Because you have, on one hand, the Gram Seva, which begins once the Dasara celebration starts, which is nothing but a beautiful demonstration of the Karma Marga, of the path of selfless service. You have all the rituals in the Purnachanda Auditorium with the sacrifice, which symbolize the Bhakti Marga, where you worship the Lord. You have all the priests there who are chanting Ramayanam, chanting Bhagavatam, Devi Bhagavatam. There is Durga Saptasati, which is going on the sidelines by the students. So it is a saga of bhakti, of devotion, of adoration. And then you have the Prashanti Vidwan Mahasabha, which happens in the Sai Kulwant Hall every evening, where you have exposition of the messages of Bhagwan. You have deliberations and discussions and illuminating talks on the scriptures, which is understanding the message, which is the Jnana Marga. So Dasara is that delightful moment where all these paths to the divine are so beautifully essayed in the 10 days. And Bhagwan, in those early years, declared that he has come for Vedodharana, Vidvat Poshana, and Bhakta Samrakshana. He has come for the revival of the ancient culture of India, for the revival of the Vedas. And the culture of India can revive through the Vedas, because the Vedas are the repository of all that is eternal for humanity. And I thought that it is really significant and important and relevant for us to know what is contained in the Vedas and how we should interpret, understand and assimilate what is there in the Vedas. And that is the reason why I requested Mr. Praveena, G.R. Praveena, who is a faculty member in the Sri Sathya Sai Higher Secondary School. Even though he teaches bioscience, but he is a Vedic scholar, who is someone who has composed so many hymns on Bhagwan. He is the composer of the Saisha Shatkam. And he has such tremendous knowledge, all gifted by Bhagavan on the Vedas. So we will listen to him share his insights on why are Vedas vital for us in the current times. So that's what we will do in this last leg of Thursday Life, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Sairam, and welcome, sir, to Outside, Inside, Deep Inside.
Sairam?
Sir, you are someone who has had the opportunity to bask in the physical proximity of Bhagwan for nearly 3 decades now or more as a student, and so many years as a faculty member, and also has been part of the Prashanti Vedam group. And just this morning we had the beautiful ceremony of the inaugural function of the Veda Purusha Saptah Jnana Yajna. We had the priests lighting
Yes.
the fire, the yagnam fire,
yes,
in the traditional manner, and then the yagnam started. And I think all of us who were there witnessing this just could not but think about those days when Bhagwan was there and how Bhagwan used to preside over this entire ceremony.
Yes.
And it used to be such a glorious occasion when you used to see Bhagwan in the background of that fire. And he used to take so much interest in the conduct of this yagnam, the minutest detail of it. And you've been someone who've been part of it. So tell us, what memories come to your mind when you think about these Dasara festival, which has been going on year after year. And what are those aspects which mean a lot to you as far as Dasara is concerned?
I feel really very fortunate because I am the part of this Vedam group here, and I can still remember in what way Swami had encouraged each one of us in learning these Vedic mantras and chanting of Vedic mantras, and those memories will remain forever in our minds. When Swami used to sit in front of that Yajna Kundam, that very nicely shining effulgent flame of light emanating from the Yajna Kundam, and Yajna Purusha himself sitting close to it with all beaming energy on his face. That really comes to my mind. It's a beautiful sight to see. And Swami used to really bless all the devotees who used to watch this great Yajnam going on. And particularly Swami used to bless all of us, the Vedic students, staff, who used to come to participate in the Yajnam. And it's really a great blessing because Veda Purusha himself is encouraging us, is blessing us, and he is guiding us. I think one cannot have a better chance than such an occasion when we are able to participate in such yajna, when Bhagwan used to be there physically present in such occasions.
You used to see Bhagwan take so much interest, isn't it? The previous day itself he would call all the boys and he would give them dhotis, and he used to, in fact, on so many occasions ask the boys to chant prior to the Dasara function. He used to build up this momentum for the Dasara function, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Not merely giving the chants, but also Swami, during the 7 days of these celebrations, we used to have the special function, the Vidwan Mahasabha, when Swami used to give chants for all our students from each campuses to chant Vedic mantra before Swami's discourse could start. That's why the selected students from each campus, they used to come together, practice, and Swami used to really monitor, and Swami used to bless all these students who used to chant these Vedic mantras during such occasions. And Swami is very, very loving, and Swami is very graceful to bless all these children with abundance, blessings and grace.
In fact, that was one main motivation to learn Vedam when I think about those times. That chance to stand next to Bhagwan and chant Vedam. I think that is what really propelled so many students to learn this mantra, because you could get this chance to stand next to Bhagwan and chant and then get the coveted Padmaskaram.
Exactly. In fact, students used to crave for that. Sir, sir, I will go. I will come. I will learn Vedic mantras. So let me get one chance, one photograph with Swami and one Padmaskar with Swami. So these are the aspirations and the desires which students used to have, the highest form of desire to have such darshan and special of Lord. And Swami used to bless each of these children.
And I think these are the ways how Swami really motivated students who are in high school, students who are in university to take to Vedam chanting seriously.
No doubt about that. The very fact that we can see now, even in the physical absence of Bhagwan, that Vedam learning, Vedam chanting is going on in every institution, every campus of Swami nowadays also, that itself shows the encouragement, incentive and motivation and guidance that Swami has given. We can see even in our own schools, every day we are chanting Vedas. Even when we have in the morning prayer session, invariably we have 15 to 20 minutes Vedic chanting, and also the learning of the outer meaning, inner meaning of the Vedic mantras, etc. And apart from that, even separate a group for chanting in the hostel also. So this shows even to what extent Swami has motivated all of us, the teachers, and in turn the students, learning from these teachers.
Can I ask you, we were discussing about the time when Bhagwan was physically there,
yes,
and you know, what was the motivation levels.
Yes.
Now, in the absence of the physical presence of Bhagwan,
yes,
what has been your observation about the interest in chanting Vedam? Are the students still that much interested to learn Vedam? What is the motivation now?
Although actually now the responsibility of teachers, I feel, is more, because it is we who have directly received his blessings and also the guidance, inspiration. Now we have the great responsibility of transferring this into the students. And I feel we have succeeded because we can see even today students are really taking up and also chanting and having lot of inclination towards Vedic learning. One example I can give you, the annual Vedam competition that we have in our school, we have more than 3/4 of total strength of the school, they are coming forward to participate in the Vedam competitions.
Wow.
That itself shows really they are very much interested in Vedic learning and they really want to participate in these competitions. They want to learn more and more things. And we keep for the competitions nearly 20 different suktas and mantras altogether. And really they come up learning all these mantras, either individually coming to us, learning them, or collectively as a group they learn and they really take interest in learning these things.
So you really cannot put a finger on what exactly is the motivation, but it is happening.
It is happening. It really is happening. And also we have always told the students that the very fact that you are learning Vedas along with your academic studies, and we have told them, those students who learn Vedas, chant Vedic mantras regularly, you will be able to see very remarkable improvement in the academics, which is happening now. We have seen, particularly at the school level, since they are chanting almost every day, spending little time on Vedic mantras. And what else can you think? Out of more than 5,000 schools, CBS schools across the country, just imagine a school, Satya Sai School here, where the students participate, take part in so many events, including the sports meet event, which is coming very close to the board examination time. They spend quite a few days practicing for those events, but yet participating in so many other activities, still there's the whole school is ranking one among the 10th out of 5,000 schools. What else can we think? The students are able to really do well in the examination. They're able to remember what they studied. Their memory power is really quite good, which means whatever we have told, that by Vedic chanting, you will be able to remember more. You'll be able to increase your concentration power and the memory power is really practically shown in these cases.
I think that is fantastic. Perhaps one really needs to do a deeper study on this, because here, as you said, students get practically only 2 hours to study, which is the official study hours in the hostel. And at other times of the day, they are busy with so many activities because the hostel schedule is so tight.
Yes, yes.
And it's the same even during the examinations.
Yes, yes. Exactly. That's what we have heard about various experiments that have been done on human mind, the effect of Vedas, Vedic chanting on human mind. And really, I have read quite a few articles on that. I came to know that those people or those individuals who chant Vedic mantras regularly and with real earnestness, they are able to show a lot of improvement even in academics. And I really believed it and I propagated it to our students. And really, we could see a very good result on these lines.
Fantastic. I think that is really such a heartening thing for us to know, because I think everything that Bhagavan has laid down for us, everything that is laid down by our ancients, by our sages and seers,
yes,
when they have mentioned something, it has actually come out of science. It has not come out of any irrationality.
Exactly.
It has come out of deep study, but it is deep study done going inside. They are spiritual scientists.
Yes,
in
yes,
some sense.
Exactly. Yes. Because when you say Vedas, the very root word from where the word Veda has been originated is vid. There is a root word, dhatu. So vid means to know. So Veda means knowledge. Vedas really is a source of wisdom. You can see every knowledge contained in the Vedas. Often I mentioned this particular verse which I could compose. This jnanameva vedasyartham sarva vijnana sagaraha, physics, maths, chemistry, cha, sarva subject samahitaha.
Mm-hmm.
So what you say, even the modern science, it could be physics, chemistry, biology, mathematics, astrology, everything is contained in the Vedas. The only thing is we are not able to comprehend, we are not able to analyze what exactly is contained in the Vedas, how to interpret them. We have not fully succeeded. However, every science is part of this Vedic wisdom. That's why Vedas are called knowledge. Even we have the mention of 18 important scientists during Vedic times.
Mm-hmm.
Brahma, Surya, Vasishtha, Tortri, Mano, Paulasya, Lomasho, Maricharan, Gira, Vyaso, Shavunaku. Like that, we got 18 different scientists who are really very well versed in these physical sciences. They are said to be scientists of those days.
They mention about all these disciplines.
Yes, or they mention about all these disciplines. Even we have the science or the knowledge of computer science in the Vedas. We have the knowledge of biochemistry. We have the knowledge of metallurgy. We have the knowledge of even the Vaimanika Shastra written by Bharadwaja. That itself starts as Vimano Andajayati. Andaja is the bird, the principle of birds that they use for flight, the flying. Same flight mechanism is used in the present day, the aircrafts. So you can see that such a Vaimanika Shastra is a very big Shastra itself, where all these principles are given as small, small sutras.
The art of flying.
Yes, art of flying. And the principle behind art of flying, even they mention about the mirrors, darpanas, what type of mirrors. Everything is metallurgy, everything is mentioned in the Vaimanika Shastra. This is one small example about metallurgy, even you can find even in the Chamakam. Mm-hmm. Sisanchame, Trapuschame, all these metals mentioned in the Chamakam. So, nothing is left. All the knowledge is contained in the Vedas. Only thing is, we have to have knowledge to interpret them, analyze them, understand them, and make use of them in our day-to-day applications.
On one hand, there is a lot of knowledge which is there, and of course, a lot of it is lost also.
We have very little left. Out of 1,160 branches, or the shakhas, Vedic shakhas, now we are left with only 7 to 8 branches, shakhas. Unfortunately, we have lost all the other shakhas, the branches. But these shakhas, which are available right now, 7 to 8 shakhas, are enough. In the sense, enough knowledge is contained, enough wisdom is contained only in these branches. If we are able to at least understand and analyze part of it, definitely we will be able to get so much out of them.
The other aspect, as you mentioned, is someone really needs to do a deeper study, and it's all in the language Sanskrit.
Yes.
And Sanskrit is a very coded language, isn't it?
Exactly. You can see the Sanskrit, which is said to be Deva Bhasha, written in Devanagari Lipi. It's a very sacred language, Daiva Bhasha. And you can see the Sanskrit language is so rich, and also having the highest number of vocabulary. You can see it's a great language. Although apparently it's very difficult language, but actually it's simple and easy language also, quite lucid. And you can see the way in which the words can be manipulated to have an understanding of any object is wonderful and fascinating. One small example possible I can give you, if you want to say a dry tree is in front of you, standing in front of you, you merely say, Shushkaha vrikshaha agre tishtati. So you can see, shushka is nothing but a dry, agre in front of you, tishtati, it is there. Vrikshaha is a padapa or the tree. So you can say, shushko vrikshaha agre tishtati. But same meaning can be conveyed by using different words also in Sanskrit. Nirasa taruriva vilasati purataha.
Mm-hmm.
Nirasa is shushka. Taruhu is vriksha. Vilasati or stands, it's there. Puratha, in the front. So, Shushko Vrikshastishtatyagre is equal to Nirasa Taruriva Vilasati Purata. So you can see how rich language is Sanskrit is. The same idea can be conveyed by using different words. That shows the richest vocabulary that Sanskrit contains.
Every word has so many meanings.
Exactly.
When you understand through different types of grammar.
Yes, yes. One small example possible I can give you. Usually we chant, it is customary to chant the Omkara before we chant any Vedic mantras, any suktas. So this Omkara is nothing but a pranava. Pranava, pranavaha mantranam setuhu. That itself is the bridge that takes us across the Vedic knowledge. So this pranava has been derived from the root word nu. Nu is a root word, the dhatu. But this nu has got so many different meanings. Rakshana, Gati, Kanti, Tripti, Avagama, Preeti, Pravesha, Sravana, Samissa, Icha, Kirti, Vyapti, Alingana, Dana, Boga, Himsa, Vriddhi. You see, only one root word has got so many meanings.
These are all the meanings.
Yes, yes. In different contexts, these different words are used. But all have the same root called Unnu.
Amazing. So, when we take any Sanskrit word, for example.
Yes.
And we have seen Bhagwan give us different meanings of, even if you take, for example, the word Gopala.
Yes, yes.
Once Bhagwan would say, go means cow.
Yes, yes.
And at another point in time, Swami would say, go means earth. In fact, when I was a student, yes. And when Bhagwan used to give different meanings of the same word,
yes,
and
yes.
I used to think that Swami is very conveniently, you know, ascribing different meanings according to whatever he wants to convey that day.
Yes.
I was, you know, in my ignorant mind as a student, I used to think, how can it be? One day Swami says, go means earth. Another day he says, go means cow. Another day he says, go means individual soul.
Yes, yes, yes.
And
yes, yes.
How can it be like that? But today when you see, actually Sanskrit is such a pregnant language, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. See, the go has different meanings altogether. At the same time, the go, cow can be mentioned by using different words also. When you say go is cow, dhenu is cow, go is cow, vata, usra, shatari, all this mean cow only.
Wow.
So you see, the same same object can have different words altogether.
In different contexts, there can be different levels of meaning and understanding.
Yes, yes.
I think that's why you have, you know, you understand everything. One is what they mean superficially, and then you try and get a deeper meaning out of it.
Yes, yes. That's how even most of the Vedic mantras also have got deeper inner meanings, which are much different from the superficial meaning that we tend to perceive. One small example possible I can give you, in what way the very Rudram, the Namakam, is a very powerful mantra. Outwardly or superficially it may convey one meaning. But let me also tell you, the whole Rudram is all about the medicinal system.
Oh,
the whole Rudram, for so many various types of disorders, diseases, there are very highly, very specifically prescribed medicines with a specific mention of those, the aushadis or the herbal, the parts or these medicinal plants. The scientific names are also there, and that is why the Rudram or the Namakam conveys two, or the dual system of this meaning. One is the normal meaning, propitiating Lord Rudra, who is a Vedic deity. And the second one is basically the medicinal system, how various medicines can be prepared and how they can be used to cure many of the diseases.
Wow.
Yes.
So this is what also is conveyed in the entire Rudram.
Yes, yes, yes. In fact, the second way of the Rudram, that is the second meaning of the Rudram, which totally deals about the medicine, because all of us know, you can see the Lord Rudra is said to be the best of the physicians. Lord Rudra. That's why he is said to be the one who is said to be the healer, the greatest healer. He can heal all the diseases. He can heal all the disorders that we are coming across. That's why by praying to him, we will be able to cure all our problems. Okay, if you take just one verse from the Rudram, say, Yata ishu shivatama shivam babhuva te dhanuhu shivasha ravya yata vataya no rudram radaya. Literally it means, we pray to that compassionate goddess Shiva, who is the consort of Lord Shiva, to protect us from the arrows coming from the bow of her consort Lord Shiva, which is capable of injuring us. And also we pray to the merciful and compassionate Lord Shiva not to show his anger on us. This is actually the word by word meaning, one way if you take. But taking the second meaning, the other way, you can see, if you are wounded, okay, or injured by an arrow or any other weapon, such as wound or injury, and the pain arising therefrom can be healed by applying the paste made out of the following herbs: Devadaru, Ballataka, Shami, Heda, Haladi, Kan, Pippala, Gorochana. So, but how these herbs are used? Okay, for example, when you say Shami, the scientific name Prosopis Pygeria, Heda, Terminalia Chabula, Kan, Jasmanium Auriculatum. So each of these has got its own scientific name. In fact, I was wonderstruck when I got this meaning from some source. I really wanted to see whether these scientific names and these herbal the medicinal plants are really existing and they're referring to that. When I refer to a comprehensive dictionary, Sanskrit dictionary, they have made mention of all these important medicinal plants with their scientific names.
Wow.
And how they are prepared and how it has to be applied, everything is mentioned in the Rudram itself. This is only one paragraph that I have taken. Not one paragraph, one small suktam, one verse. And you have so many such verses in Rudram, and each one gives a solution and as a remedy for one important disease that we are suffering from.
Wow.
Yes.
This is such a revelation. When I think about it, two things that come to my mind. One is, Bhagwan always advocated the chanting of Rudram, saying this is what will heal the world.
Yes,
actually.
Exactly, yes.
So when we see the superficial meaning, yes, many things perhaps does not make sense now. It seems very archaic and it seems that it is not relevant for the times, you know. Nowadays,
yes.
There's nobody on horses, there's nobody releasing arrows and everything seems so strange.
Yes, yes.
But now, the meaning that you have now just mentioned,
yes.
It makes it so clear, it makes it so advanced and so
really,
scientific.
I still remember when Swami was physically uncomfortable, Swami had taken himself the pain of the other devotees. That time somebody asked, one of the devotees asked Swami, you have taken all the pain of others and now we are not able to see you at this stage, but please tell us what to do, what we can do from our side. It is then Swami mentioned, you just chant Rudram.
Wow.
So Swami had given this as a solution. So if Rudram is so powerful merely by chanting, it solves, it gives as remedy for many of the disorders, plus it purifies oneself, it purifies the environment also.
Wow.
Yes.
Amazing. And I would like to believe, this is just one interpretation.
Yes.
And I think if you have scholars,
yes,
probably tomorrow someone will come with completely different interpretation of perhaps how the Rudram is helping one not to cure these diseases, but
yes,
perhaps diseases of our inner being. I don't know,
sure,
diseases
sure.
of the mind.
Yes, exactly.
We
yes.
never know, but because
yeah.
the language is such
language
a coded language.
Is such. Yes, yes. It is true with the Chamakam also. Rudram and Chamakam put together, Namakam and Chamakam put together called Sri Rudram and or Rudradhyaya, they go together actually. So both these mantras, very powerful mantras, they deal with only the medicinal system.
Wow.
Yes.
It's all about healing at so many levels.
Exactly. Yes.
And
yes.
I think one should never go by the meaning that is given in our books which quote-unquote do the translation.
Yes, yes.
And
yes,
limit
sir.
The translation to
yeah,
that.
Yes. It has got a deeper meaning, inner meaning, a spiritual meaning and coded meaning.
Yes.
Which we should decode it and then understand. Probably
yes.
we'll get a new world altogether.
New world altogether.
Yes.
In fact, they say Sanskrit has the power to say a sentence in a minimum number of words than any other language.
Yes, yes. That is the beauty of Sanskrit language. If you want to say the mother's love for the child, mother's love for the child. 5 words you use. You just use one word, vatsalyam. You see?
Yeah, amazing. In fact, I remember I was talking to another Sanskrit scholar and he said that in those times,
yes,
in a sentence, if a sentence needs 4 words,
yes,
if the Vedic scholar
yes.
can say convey the same meaning in 3 words,
yes,
then the merit that accrues to him is almost the merit of having a suputra, a good son.
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, that is the kind of level of importance
yes.
which was given to brevity in this language.
Yes, yes. Particularly, the Sanskrit language as a part of the Vedic literature, it has got its own significance. What we can see, the Sanskrit language in the modern, the stotras, is a little different from the Sanskrit, the Vedic Sanskrit. There are differences. We can see a significant difference between the Vedic Sanskrit and the present day modern Sanskrit. And you can see only in the Vedas, the verses have the intonations. Although both stotras and Vedic mantras are written with a specific meter. Of course, if we talk about a meter, the chandas, the Vedic meters slightly vary compared to the modern classical Sanskrit meters. Vedic meters are said to be much longer. There are Sama Chandas, Vishama Chandas, etc. and the number of syllables go up to 100 or exceed 100, which is not seen in the present day classical modern Sanskrit, where the number of syllables in each meter is restricted. However, very important addition And also the compliment that you can see in the Vedic Sanskrit is that the verses have the intonations, the varieties of pitches that you can find only in the Vedic Sanskrit, and also you don't find in the modern classical Sanskrit. It is these intonations, it may be udatta, anudatta, swarita, dirghaswarita, pluta, all these different intonations, they actually give the added efficacy for Vedic chanting. That's why it's very, very important that when we chant Vedic mantras, we have to give utmost care and caution for this intonation, pronunciation of all these Vedic mantras. The moment we change or chant wrongly the Vedic intonations, the whole verse may become meaningless or the meaning may become topsy-turvy.
If you can elaborate this with some examples, sir.
Yes, I can give maybe one of the examples which is mentioned in the scripture itself. Mantra hina swarato varnatova mithya prayukto natamartamaha sa vagvajro yajamanam hinasti yathendra shatru swarato paradhat. Mantra hina swarato varnatova. Mantra hina swarato varnatova. Mithya prayukto na tam artham aha. Tam artham na aha. That meaning will not come. Swarato varnatova. Any defect concerning swara or varna, that meaning will not come. Yathendra shatru swarato paradhat. During ancient time, there is a story as mentioned in the scripture. A demon by name Thvasta, he wanted to settle score with Lord Indra. He wanted to destroy the kingdom of Indra and wanted to kill Indra. In fact, he wanted a son who can come out of Yajnakunda, who can go and kill Indra. So somebody who has to come from the Yajnahoma, Yajnakunda, and who can grow up to kill Indra. He actually wanted to chant, he had to chant, Indra Shatru Vardhasva. Indra Shatru Vardhasva. Indra Shatru Vardhasva. You see, Shatru and Dva, both of them have upward intonation, but he made a mistake, error in chanting, Indra Shatru Vardhasva, he chanted Anudatta, downward. So instead of getting a son who can come out of the Yajnakunda to go and kill Indra, he himself was killed by Indra.
The whole
meaning became topsy-turvy. Came and killed this Thvasta. Thvasta's son, that's Vritra. He got a son, yes, merely by altering a wrong intonation led to just opposite meaning.
Oh my God. So when you chant, you know, the intonations are so vital.
Yes, so vital.
Because even if the word is same, the way you chant it, whether you raise your voice in Shruti or you go down, that can alter the meaning.
Exactly. That's why in the beginning itself I said, the efficacy of Vedic chanting lies in the sound.
Wow.
In the very beginning, no script was there. No Sanskrit script. In the very beginning, we had Ninanya, the script. There was no script at all. Ninanya, but we lost it. Later on, the Manipravalam came. And then, the Sanskrit language, which is said to be a language where all these Vedic mantras, which are revealed to the sages, were written in that form. But for so many years, thousands of years, without any written form, it came from one generation to the other generation, only by hearing. Shrutva krita iti shruti. That's why Vedas came to, or got a name, Shruti. Only by hearing, they came and passed down from one generation to the next generation. But later on, many other scientists, sages, they wrote even the smritis. Smritva krita iti. Whatever the lost part of the Vedas, they were written by only by recollecting. Smritva krita, smriti. That's how Manusmriti, Parashara Smriti, etc. came into existence.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. It was always an oral tradition, and in the very later years, in the Vedic times, it was only by oral tradition.
Only by oral tradition. But nowadays, we give the excuse that we don't have much time to learn all these Vedic mantras. Usually during those days, people used to spend 12 years compulsorily, full 12 years compulsorily staying in the Gurukul. Okay, with the all guidance of the Guru, they used to learn, they used to master all the Vedas. Not merely all the Vedas, mastering Vedas means not merely byhearting, mugging up and just vomiting, it's not that. But it is even mastering Vedangas, Sadarshanas, Sankhya, Yoga, Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Purva Mimamsa, Uttara Mimamsa. Similarly, the other aspects of the Vedas, everything was learnt. Shadashanas and Shadangas were mastered, and then he used to leave the ashram of the Guru. But a person who used to observe celibacy and never used to get married, he used to spend a time of 48 years in the Gurukula and then master all this Vedic wisdom and have the knowledge with himself.
Wow, fantastic. Well, in some ways, Bhagwan has revived this Vedic tradition. Perhaps our university is the only university where students, even as they are doing their masters in physics, chemistry and mathematics, and even their PhDs also are chanting Vedam and have so much interest.
Yes, yes.
In Vedic learning.
That's why I think there's no other go. We have to have some script in our hand. We have got very short time for learning these Vedic mantras, and having a book may help us to learn faster.
Yes.
I think, however, basically having a book or reading from a book is said to be not a good way of Vedic learning. But there's no other go. We have been using this, particularly in the initial stages of learning, but because of which we have been able to learn quite a few mantras.
Thanks to technology, because these days you can record, people can listen.
Yes, yes, yes.
That way people use the aid of a book, but still also they listen.
Yeah, in fact, by listening you will be able to grasp faster and better, and it will be more clear the moment you listen to a particular Veda, because that's how the way it has come. So the best way to memorize and retain within our memory is to listen.
The other heartening thing also is, it is not only the Sri Sathya Sai Higher Secondary School or the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning.
Yes.
There is a growing awareness,
yes,
in the present times,
yes,
about the importance of Sanskrit and the importance of these scriptures, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. You can see this Sanskrit and learning, or the inclination towards Vedic learning, is really growing even in many of the Western countries, particularly after Swami had initiated the Vedic learning among all of us. It has really spread to many of the countries, and we can see even today, many countries people are learning so earnestly and also spending a lot of time in learning Vedic mantras. We can see countries like Japan or even America, and even the other countries where people in large numbers, they come together, they learn, and they develop their own way of learning. Because for them, Sanskrit is somewhat an Aryan language, very, very difficult for them to pick up. And you can see, particularly some of the Asian countries, they are not able to even twist their tongue to match the sound that can be produced by these Sanskrit words. But they have evolved their own methods of learning these, producing these sounds. They have even produced a separate way of learning, and then they have been really learning these Vedic mantras quite seriously.
And I think they are doing it for so many reasons.
Yes.
One is also to, because only through learning Sanskrit do you get a window to understand all the knowledge that is contained in the Vedas. Because they say there are at least 17 countries around the world,
yes,
which have a university or two to study Sanskrit to gain technological advantage.
Yes, yes. We should remember here, the Sanskrit is the one which enable us to get the knowledge on one hand. On the other hand, mere chanting of Vedic mantras itself will generate a better, a positive vibration around us, which will purify oneself and the surrounding. See, there are two things. One thing is to go into deeper studies of Sanskrit and also the Vedic knowledge. Try to understand the verse, try to analyze, try to interpret, know the meaning and try to get something out of it. Secondly, merely by chanting, what you are going to get out of it. Yes, that's what is happening here. Even if you are not very sure of the meaning, it doesn't mean that you should not know the meaning, but I am just telling, even one chants correctly, with all pronunciation, intonations correctly, then also you'll have the benefit. I still remember an occasion, mm-hmm, when Swami had initiated this Vedic learning in Prashant Nilayam, particularly for the students and the staff en masse during, I think, 1993, the Vice Chancellor's conference time, when Swami said, yes, from today onwards, when Swami comes out for darshan, Vedic chanting will start.
2003,
around that time.
Yes.
That was the time when Swami gave a lot of importance and also very good chance for all the Vedic boys. In fact, I remember one evening when Swami had called, this group of Vedam boys who used to chant in the mandir, and Swami called them inside the interview room, and Swami is speaking to them for about half an hour. Then Swami asks, any questions do you have? Then one boy made himself bold and asked, Swami, Swami, we have been chanting Vedic mantras, but most of the mantras, meanings we do not know. Swami, is it wrong practice of chanting? Then Swami said, Bangaru, don't worry. You start learning Vedic mantras. You should know the meaning. You can learn the meaning gradually as you keep on chanting. But you chant the Vedic mantras. Chanting Vedic mantras itself will have a positive impact on your mind. And Swami gave an analogy. Swami said, one patient will go to a doctor, and doctor will diagnose what's the problem with the patient, and then he prescribes a drug or the tablet for him. Then doctor says, yes, you take this tablet. Then patient will get the doubt. He asks the doctor, doctor, I do not know the chemical formula of this drug. Will it have impact if I take this drug without knowing the chemical formula? Then doctor says, sure, you take this drug. It will have an impact. Similarly, Swami said, first you learn the Vedic mantras. It will have its own positive vibration, positive impact on your mind. I think that itself is an encouraging point for all of us to start with Vedic learning.
And I think, as you were mentioning, there are a lot of Western nations also showing a lot of interest.
Yes.
In chanting and learning. In fact, sometime back I remember reading this article about the James Junior School in London.
Yes.
Which has made Sanskrit compulsory, and students of this school are among the toppers year after year.
Yes, yes.
And now this has been followed by some schools in Ireland also.
Yes, yes. We have so many such schools, particularly schools where the Sanskrit study is given a lot of importance. Vedic studies are given importance. The learning and also understanding of Bhagavad Gita is given importance. We have so many such schools, even many in Western countries.
I was seeing this video where they were asking some of the teachers of the James Junior School.
Yes.
Why they have taken up Sanskrit so seriously.
Yes.
And the head of the department of Sanskrit, he was explaining how Sanskrit is a language.
Yes.
Which was so important to improve even the dexterity of the tongue.
Yes, exactly.
He said,
yes,
it uses all the nerves of the tongue.
Yes, 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 yes. That's where you see, whenever you chant Vedic mantras or utter Sanskrit word, invariably almost all part of your body is involved in it. The very fact that even while Vedic chanting, you can see some of the scholars or some of the chanters, they automatically move their head. And also part of the body, hand also goes up and down. You can see almost all the parts of your body will be involved, and the sound that's produced has got highest impact, which you don't get in any other language. And also, by scientific study, they have discovered that while chanting these Vedic verses or Sanskrit verses, the networking in the brain is said to be of highest cadre, highest status, highest category, and very high complex networking take place. And continuous chanting of these Vedic mantras, where you can see all these Vedic mantras, where the syllables or the aksharas repeat continuously, that leads to the improving and also the enhanced memory power, scientifically proved. That's why it has been said by recent research work that those people who are used to chanting the Sanskrit verses, mantras, chanting of mantras, etc., they have almost no Alzheimer's disease, memory loss.
Wow.
It has been scientifically done and scientifically proved, because you can see the continuous chanting of the syllables will lead to such a complex networking system in the brain that will enable, that will activate the brain cells, and the memory will be lasting forever.
Wow.
Yes.
I mean, forget the metaphysical realm. Even physically,
yes,
you will be a healthy person just by chanting.
Yes, yes, yes. That is because of the vibrations that are created, plus the various parts of the body that are involved in Vedic chanting.
Wow.
Activating almost all the cells of our body, and thus keeping oneself healthy and safe.
In fact, I remember another teacher explaining of the same James Junior School, saying that,
yes,
just like when the students chant the Vedic mantras, their tongue is used in every way. All the nerve centers,
yes,
are activated.
Yes.
Similarly, when they write also Sanskrit,
yes,
he said the involvement of the hand and the movement of the hand,
yes,
is again something which is so important, in the sense that the way they use the limbs, they use the fingers,
yes,
while writing the Sanskrit script,
yes,
is itself which improves the dexterity of the hand.
Yes. Now that, I think, itself shows how great Sanskrit language is. You can see the sound emanating from distinct places of utterance have been identified, especially when you recite or utter a Sanskrit word. We have got guttural from the throat, palate, palatals, then the head region, cerebrals, then teeth, dentals, lips, labial, nose, nasal. So all these emanate from various parts of our body, and they are able to activate almost all different nerve centers in these parts.
Wow.
Yes.
This is really fantastic. So you have, just by chanting, you are healed.
Yes.
You are healthy, you are healed, and this is something, I think, that those vibrations that are created which help you, your inner being as well as the surroundings.
Yes, yes. In fact, whenever we chant with sincerity, with the correct way of chanting, earnestness, I'm sure, I think, there is a positive effect that's created. I think no other example, better example can be given than what happened in the life of Raghavendra Swami, Mantralaya.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you must have heard about it.
Yes.
And you can see what happened here in this case. Raghavendra Swamiji, who was earlier known to be different by name, Venkatanatha, as he was in a tour to Kumbakonam along with his wife, he went to one house, and he was small, young age that time, and he was given a work to do. That work is very simple work. You be here in the temple and you have to prepare sandalwood paste to be given to the devotees who visit this temple. And very sincerely, Venkatanatha, the former, the Swami Raghavendra, he was doing his work very sincerely, kept on grinding, okay, making the sandalwood paste, okay, by grinding the sandalwood properly. And then, whenever he used to do that, he used to chant the Agni Suktam very sincerely. And whenever he used to prepare the sandalwood paste, chanting Agni Suktam, and started giving, distributing to all the devotees who used to visit the temple. And these devotees started applying this sandalwood paste to their body, to various parts. The moment they started applying, they felt burning sensation all over the body. Because he has chanted the Agni Suktam. And the host, he was surprised. He asked Venkatanath, "What is this happening? What are you doing? Why it is like that?" Then Venkatanatha did not tell anything. But he, next time, what he did was, he did the same work, sandalwood paste preparation, but chanting the Varuna Suktam, connected with Lord of Water. And then he started distributing the same sandalwood paste to the devotees who visited. And the moment they started applying this sandalwood paste, they felt a sense of drenching with water throughout the body. This is recorded. This is what has happened. So this shows the very fact, or the mantra that we chant, is so powerful. Agni Suktam, yes, burning sensation. Varuna Suktam, they felt a drench with water. You see how powerful these mantras are.
In fact, that really reminds me of all these epics that,
yes,
we read about Ramayana, about Mahabharata. You know, it is the same arrow, but it is the mantra that they,
yes,
chant.
Exactly.
That is what makes the arrow,
yes, yes,
a very potent arrow.
Yes. We also have an example of Swami Vidyaranya. Sri Vidyaranya, coming the 5th century after Shankara Bhagavatpada, that is, he was said to be the 12th Jagadguru of Sringeri Sharadapitam, that is from 1380 to 1386 AD. It is said that Sage Vidyaranya did 24 lakhs of Gayatri Japa, and Goddess Gayatri appeared before him, physically manifested. The sage asked Mother to bless the whole land, okay, with the timely rain and also with good harvest, peace and prosperity. And lo and behold, God's Gayatri said Astu to his prayer. Within a very short period of time, the whole land which was very drought hit that time, received heavy rainfall, the whole place drenched with water, there were a lot of prosperity, good harvest, everything was blessed. So that's how you can see how a mantra, if chanted with all fervor and devotion, will have a positive impact.
In fact, when you see a lot of these mantras,
yes,
even if you take the Ganapati Atharva Sirsham,
yes,
it says that, you know, the sins that you have committed in the previous night,
yes,
will be obliterated once you chant it in the morning.
Yes.
Or the sins that you might have committed in the morning,
yes,
will be nullified once you chant this in the evening. You have these assurances and these blessings,
yes,
that are,
yes,
mentioned in the mantras.
Yes. Yes, exactly. That shows how one has to chant and what the benefit that one will get, the Phalashruti. We are chanting specific mantra, but chanting those specific mantras or the suktas will have its own specific benefit that we may get out of it, provided we chant correctly, with sincerity, earnestness and all devotion to the Lord.
Can I ask you something very personal, sir?
Yes.
You are someone who have been so passionate about Vedic chanting and had the opportunity to chant in front of Bhagwan, and now takes so much interest in teaching students also to chant. What has been your personal experience in chanting Vedic mantras?
If you see personal experience, since I have been chanting and also I have got the opportunity to teach others regularly these Vedic mantras, I feel very comfortable in the sense I could take part, and also it's not talking about oneself, but very actively involved in various activities. If you see the field of yoga also, God has given me the opportunity to even teach yoga to the whole group of children. And also the sports, when you see the field of sports also, even I am able to even match the student of our age, maybe around 15, 16 for boys who are come and play.
Less than
me.
Half your age, yeah.
Yes. 15, 16, 17 years old, and they are, in fact, they are wonderstruck, and they are always, they want to come and play with, in a court where I am playing, thinking that, okay, very strong sir is playing very nicely. So even at this age of nearly 50 years, I think I am able to keep up that. And also, the other, what Swami has encouraged me to compose, the verses in Sanskrit, more than 100 verses in Sanskrit, which are also blessed by Swami himself. So various field, if you see, maybe the poetic, or maybe the yoga, or maybe the sports, or maybe even as in charge of a dance group in the Ahron school. I think all round this one, it has helped me because of Vedic chanting regularly. That's what I very confidently feel, and also personally have full conviction about it.
That is what has really kept you so dynamic,
yes,
so
yes,
alive,
maybe,
and so full of energy.
Yes, yes.
Oh, that is amazing. I mean, you're a live example of what Vedic chanting and Vedic learning can do to us. It's really amazing. There is so much that you can share, and I know we will have to continue this discussion.
However, I should tell something what has been done in the field of science also, because people who want to test whether the Vedic chanting will really have impact on the environment or our one individual self, it's really been done. I cannot forget an incident which is actually recorded, which took place long back in India only, that is during the Bhopal gas tragedy. The city of Bhopal was reeling under fear. There was death and destruction everywhere. It's on the night of December 2nd, 1984. A teacher, 45 years old, his name is S.L. Kushwa. He woke up at 1:30 in the night on hearing his wife, Triveni, age 36, she was vomiting continuously, and also saw his children beginning to coughing, feeling chest pain, burning in the eyes, and suffocation. Then, looking out of their home, they saw people running in panic. One of them told Kushwa of the gas leak in the Union Carbide factory a mile away from their house. It was a gas by name MIC, methyl isocyanate gas. A very highly poisonous gas, lethal gas, has leaked from this carbide plant.
Yes.
And there was havoc everywhere. people started running helter-skelter. Mm. And that was seen by this family, and they saw people running here and there, and then immediately they also took a decision, they will run out from there. However, it is during that time, Triveni suggested, why not start doing Agnihotra?
Uh-huh.
Yes. They immediately, the family members, okayed, and they did the Agnihotra, and within 20 minutes, all the symptoms of methyl isocyanate gas poisoning went away. Within 20 minutes.
Wow.
So you can see that Yajna itself acted as shield. They protected the family. No other family, which was even much away, farther from that particular place, could survive. But this was very close to the carbide plant. Nothing happened to them. So this incident shows, this is a recorded incident, shows merely by chanting and doing such yajna, yaga, you can see it acts as a shield, protecting the whole family, all of us. That is the significance of doing yajna. Probably that's what Swami has given even the significance of doing what we do today, started, that is the Prashanti Yajna here in the Poonachandra Hall. It's of great importance. People may think, okay, we are pouring so much of ghee, putting that, this, etc. However, the spiritual significance behind it is of great or enormous. One cannot understand it actually.
In fact, it's really interesting that you are mentioning about Agnihotra, Homam,
yes.
Because very recently I came across what is called Homa farming.
Yes, yes.
We know now how the environment is so polluted.
Yes.
Even though they say that there is organic farming happening, but in reality,
yes,
because our air, our water, our soil is so polluted,
yes,
that they say unless you leave the soil for 5-7 years,
yeah,
completely undisturbed,
yes,
it will never restore its natural state and its virginity,
yes,
because it has been ruined over so many generations.
Yes, yes.
But
yes,
there have been people,
yes,
who have found a very effective way of,
yes,
restoring nature's balance,
yes,
and restoring the vitality of the soil,
yes,
through Agnihotra Homam.
Yes.
So they have done experiments,
yes,
wherein they do the Agnihotra Homam, and
yes,
the Homam has to be done with according to very, very prescribed and strict regulations and rules, and the ingredients that go into it also have to be very pure and largely drawn from the cow, from the desi cow.
Yes, yes.
The ghee,
yes,
has to be from the cow of the milk of the desi cow, and the cow dung is used to prepare the oblations into,
yes,
the fire.
Yes.
And the fire ritual, this Agnihotra ritual, needs to be done during sunrise and sunset.
Correct, correct.
According to the lunar calculations and the lunar cycle and according to the lunar calendar. And there is a subtle element of purity.
Yes.
Even the person who is performing,
yes,
also has to observe. So,
yeah,
there are certain rules and regulations. But what they have found is once this is done,
yes,
according to these rules and with sincerity and,
yes,
purity of mind,
yes, yes,
they have found that in a very, very short time, you,
yes,
don't need even 5-7 years.
Yes.
You know, in 6 months, 1 year, you are able to restore,
yes,
the soil,
yes,
its natural state. They are saying it is very mysterious. It's almost like when you're chanting this, and they have different ways by which this chanting is amplified.
Yes.
They place different rectangular boxes,
yes,
along the field so that the chanting's vibration is amplified.
Yes, yes.
And they say that it is almost like it is drawing some mysterious energies from different planets maybe. But something,
yes, yes,
amazing is happening. That whole area is very purified, soil is purified,
yes,
and the harvest,
yes, yes,
is very, very nutritious.
Yeah.
The seeds are wholesome.
Yes.
And they have also found that this plot of land, which,
yes,
is treated with the Agnihotra ash,
yes,
does not need any fertilizer, any pesticide, any, yes, chemical.
Yes. A similar experiment a couple of years ago, which was conducted by Professor V.P.N. Nampuri in Kerala,
mm-hmm,
in a village called Panjal in Thrissur district,
mm-hmm,
when they had conducted fire ritual called, mm-hmm, Agni Ratram for a period of more than 1 week's time, where so many Yajna Kundas were there, and they, out of eagerness and also out of scientific mind, they have really done this very keenly. The team of his team, Professor V.P.N. Nampuri, who was the director, the Cochin University, in their science and technology division, and he was very interested. What happens? He wanted to see what happens when you chant Vedic mantras, and he kept some of the pots where the seeds are sown for germination. Seeds, three different seeds were selected, and such pots were kept at various distances from the Yajna Kundam. And after the chanting, after the Yajnam, of the whole procedure, they analyzed. They really saw made a very important observation that those seeds which are kept very close to the Yajna Kundam, they germinated better and faster. And also they analyzed the soil and also the air for its purity. They found that the microbial activity, particularly the lethal microbes, were less in those areas or air or the environment close to the Yajna Kundam. And the soil also was much purer. And those pots which are kept away farther distance from the Yajna Kundam, the seed germination was slow, and the plantlet which came out and the plant which grew later, it was not that healthy. So this fact shows that the vibrations which are produced by Vedic chanting and also the positive environment that is created from such Yajna Kundas, that have a positive impact on the soil, on the microbes, and also on the water, and also on the various seeds. The scientific study is shown.
Fantastic. I think we can never ever grasp and fathom the various multifarious benefits.
Yes.
Of all these ancient scriptures and the rituals that have been passed down to us. I think because everything is actually very, very scientific.
Yes, yes. In fact, we have to do a scientific study more and more on these matters.
Yes.
We are actually, what we have now and what we have done till today is very, very little.
Yes.
But the moment we understand more and more from the Vedic knowledge and try to go deeper, I think we'll get into a different world altogether. Because so much knowledge is contained. Only thing is, we should have different perception. We should have enough patience and also knowledge, wisdom to understand, get into these subjects.
Yes.
Then I think we'll encounter a world of a totally different kind.
Absolutely.
Which may be much better than what we're, yes, experiencing today.
Yes, absolutely. And this whole exercise has to be done with a sense of reverence.
Yes, yes, yes.
That is when the Vedas will reveal themselves to us.
Yes, yes, yes.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, sir, for taking your time out. And I know there is so much more that you can share. And we will definitely have many more sessions on these lines, because there is so much that Bhagwan himself also has mentioned about the Indian culture,
yes,
about,
yes,
our ancient practices.
In fact, our Indian culture stands on this basis, foundation,
yes,
of Vedic wisdom.
Yes, yes.
That's,
yes,
why our Indian culture is said to be so precious and is a real treasure. Because,
yes,
it has got a foundation of Vedic wisdom.
Yes. And we definitely really need to dwell more on this in the coming episodes of this program and in also in other programs. And I really thank you for making it possible to come today, because I know it's a very busy time because Dasara Yagnam is going on and you have the Prashanthi Vidyan Mahasabha, you have the Gram Seva. Thank you so much for taking your time out, and I pray to Bhagwan that we have more occasions to discuss more about the sacred heritage that our sages and seers have given us and about which Bhagwan has spoken in so much detail and emphasis.
Thank you for the opportunity, and my gratitude to all of you, and Sai Ram to you.
Sai Ram. So that was Mr. G.R. Praveena, a teacher in the Sri Sathya Sai Higher Secondary School, and someone who has been teaching Vedam to the students in the school in Prashantanilayam for years. And as we mentioned, there is really so many dimensions to it. In fact, I remember having a conversation with a senior member of the Sai organization recently, who is also very passionate about Vedam and who goes to different states and he teaches Vedam, and he has had really some amazing real life experiences of healing that has happened with people who have taken to chanting Vedic mantram seriously. So there is definitely so much more that we really need to explore, but I think
we really need to do it in the right perspective, in the right spirit. Only then we can get a glimpse of the profundity of what is left gifted to us by our ancient sages and our spiritual scientists. And I hope this is the time during the Dasara celebrations where we have this opportunity to dwell on these things. It's a time when you cannot but think about this glorious heritage that has come to us. When we sit in the Poonachandra auditorium and listen to the Vedic chantings and the Yajnam going on there, or wherever you are, when you log on to radiosara.org and you see the live stream, I think these are moments which should help us to go into our past and then shape our present and our future with the blessings that the past has given us. Let's take the past and create and recreate a beautiful future for all of us. Thank you so much, dear listeners, for being with us. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and it's time to bring the curtains down on this beautiful Thursday when Dasara celebrations are going on. Please enjoy the Dasara celebrations, watching them, listening to them live on radiosai.org. And if you have any queries or suggestions on anything concerning Prashant Nilayam or Radio Sai, please feel free to write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. As we wind up, I thank each one of you for your beautiful words of encouragement, support and feedback. And I place myself at the lotus feet of Bhagwan for this beautiful opportunity to share his message and his love. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.